Support for Commodity Week comes from the Friends of WILL and from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign. With crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the June 13 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org, WILLAG.org. Our panelists for the day include Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing from Champaign, Illinois, and Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Kurt, I think I want to start with you and get a quick reaction from the USDA report on Tuesday. They dropped the national average yield by 10 bushels to 166 bushels to the acre. Took something like 3.25 million acres out of the corn planted number as well.
Yeah, I'm in the old-fashioned ball camp that they ratcheted down, and they were fairly aggressive right away and got right to the meat of the potatoes. A lot of analysts had two sets of numbers, what the USDA would probably come out with and probably what they thought it was. And basically, we went to what everybody thought it was, caught the trade off guard and say, whoa, here we go, and they had to put a little premium back into the marketplace because the market is not high enough to really ratchet or slow down demand. Where we go from here is to prevent plant acres. That's still a moving target. It's probably going to take some time to dial that in. But there was wordage this week that they're going to address the soybean issue in the July report.
So, whoa, where do we go? But that was only good for a dime or so. And we managed to rally again a second day here this week.
Yeah, actually, I think as far as my memory serves, I went back and tried to find some information. I think an 800 million bushel drop on carryout on corn is about the largest that I've ever seen in a month-to-month situation. Back in 12, I know we had 600 million, and it was kind of disappointing in a way that we could only get 11, 12 cents out of it. But I don't think this market's over. I think we're still trying to determine where we're at. I think Kurt's exactly right. The USDA came to where the market's been trading at, that 1.4 to 1.6 billion bushel carryout number. Whether that's the right number or not is what we're still trying to figure out. And if it's not, if we still have some reductions going either yield and or acres, I think then we get into that rationing the demand situation, which is a completely different ball game. I don't think anybody knows. I don't know when the market is going to figure it out. Is it going to be on the June 30th acres report? Is it going to be next fall whenever we actually get the corn harvested? I think that's really what the market is trying to decide right now. And I expect to see some real choppy markets back and forth, up and down, until we get more of a handle on what those numbers are.
Bill Mayer, of course, is with Strategic Farm Marketing. Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities. Wayne, earlier in the week when those reports came out, the markets jumped, and every contract jumped, and they mostly jumped the same. However, later in the week, we began to see the nearby months in corn, at least, begin to move and make a spread with those deferred months. I take it that's called a bull spread, and that means something to the marketplace.
Yeah, it does, Todd. We're not sure what we're going to have this fall for corn. We're not sure what quality that corn's going to be. And we saw the ethanol plants go to 2022 over to try to get some old crop corn pulled in right now. We're watching ADM in different places, and Cargill also narrowing their bids that way. There's a lot of talk that there will be they will hold for delivery here on the July contract, because that will be old corn for sure. Whereas if you go out to September, that could be some new corn. And we don't know what the quality is going to be on that new corn. We're looking around out here, and I'm seeing really, really short corn on the way over to the show today, if not even out of the ground. I'm talking to people everywhere that they were still planting corn today in a lot of areas, especially if they needed it for feed. This is late. I can remember in 1974, I went through two harvests, with Tabor Green, one over by Springfield where they got planted early, and we were done early, and went to Oakland, and we saw everything that was frosted because they got planted last of June like this. So there's some real problems looking at maybe quality out there and looking. And yes, we could actually see the July, you know, come up very close to the same prices as the September corn here very soon if the commercials hang in there for delivery on the July contract.
You know, Kurt, when cash corn went over $4, I had asked, I think, one of the elevator operators about whether or not producers were making old crop sales, and they said no. And I was a little unbelieving of that. And then he went on to say, but they made them before we got here, which surprised me. Is there much old crop corn in the country, and will farmers be willing to get to let go of it at this point? And I suppose the secondary question, or maybe the primary, is should they?
Well, that's a great question, because each individual is a little bit different on where they're at. But there was quite a bit of grain moved there for a while. But with the uncertainty on what type of planting progress they're going to have or what type of crop they're going to have, the human tendency is to pull in the selling and not sell all and kind of hang on and get the crop up, get it growing, and kind of see where we're at. And that's part of the reason why the front end is kind of leading in through here. You got to entice that movement, and it's just not happening right at the moment here. You know, if you're been a tight holder in through here, I think you got to kind of pick some spots and kind of feed the market as we go. Because a classic market is you just run her straight up, all of a sudden you run her straight down, and when you come back down, you say, well, we'll get some selling opportunities on a dead cat bounce, and sometimes that's not going to happen. There's been quite a few markets where you've missed some opportunities, but you don't want to get oversold. A lot of guys have entered these grain marketing programs. They found out now they're doubled up on stuff. You know, they were 25-30% sold, now they're 50-60% sold, and don't know if they're going to have 100% of the crop. So there's a lot of anxiety out there, a lot of questioning. And the main theme that we've been talking about for the last 2 years, keep it simple.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of what Kurt just said there. I think a guy can, number one, it depends on where you're at and what situation you have. We've got guys in Ohio that haven't got anything in the ground. That's a completely different situation than someplace, say, in central Illinois here where we have all the corn in the ground that the guy was planning on putting in. I think you can look at one of two approaches there. I guess I feel you need to continue to sell into the old crop corn into the rally. And I, you know, the old adage is if your stocks are tightening, you sell slowly. If they're getting bigger, you sell faster. So I think you want to be fairly slow about selling. But another approach would be to go out and make new crop sales. You've got still some carry in the market, although it didn't narrow up today, and use that old crop corn as kind of your call option against your sales that you're making, and being more aggressive in the new crop side of it. That'd be another approach that you could use. But I do think you need to be making sales into the market as it rallies slowly and conservatively. And if you need to have a comfort call or something to be able to make those sales and feel comfortable about it, I think those are available with all the different alternatives we have today on options. We can certainly do that.
Wayne Nelson, when we talked on Tuesday with you, immediately following that, we talked with Seth Meyer, the chairman of the World Agricultural Outlook Board. He was telling us that while they had put 3 million acres, or taken 3 million acres out of the corn crop for this year, that we needed to recognize that the Planting Intentions Report already had some acres built into it. So if you take some of the numbers, I think Jackie Vakes was thinking maybe there might be 1.5 to 2 million already built into the Planting Intentions Report. That would push us close to 5 million acres for prevent and failed acres in the United States. What do you think that number really will look like by the time we get to the fall? There's an awful lot of corn acres that simply are not planted in South Dakota, Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, and even in Iowa.
Well, IEG, or the former Informa group, thinks it's going to be closer to 8 million acres. That's what their numbers come out on Thursday. I'm going to also say that I'm going to go a little farther and say I think it's closer to 9.5 million acres that aren't going to be planted. We're hearing people all over northern Illinois, Ohio, northeastern Indiana, Missouri. One of the guys in our group that we emailed back and forth today said he took a trip and was just driving around. He drove about 1,200 miles, and he said lots of fields that weren't planted. And I think that everybody, they're looking and they're saying, this is a really wet field. I can't get in it. I've got the acres of corn built up in my base that I can take it as prevent plant corn. I'm going to do that rather than put beans in the middle of June.
The University of Illinois folks have put together a supply and demand table. They did this yesterday. It's up on the IL Corn site, or will be fairly shortly. And they use the USDA numbers as a base. USDA at 3 million acres gone, put a $3.80 cash price on the crop. The university said, well, if we actually have 7 million less than that and 10 million less than that, we're going to put a 550 and a 580 number on that. Where do you think we might be?
Well, I think as far as prevent plant acres, I will say this just from a practical standpoint, personal experience. The last two weeks, they've declined from what we expected 2 weeks ago. We had our conference call this morning. We've got a lot of prevent plant claims in the office at Strategic. A lot of them are partial acres, partial fields, partial farms. We may still be waiting on some of the total prevent plant stuff that's coming out of the east. I think that the prevent plant acreage is probably low that the government was using myself. I think it probably needs to go up some. But where the failed acres come into that, as these acres, I just talked to a guy over by Quincy yesterday, corn's planted, the levee broke, lost, the field, so that's failed acres. That doesn't really go into the non-planted acre category. So I think the total acres that are lost are probably low, I guess, let me put it that way. As far as yields go, a 5% reduction basically is what the USDA took. We're a month and a half to 2 months late on a lot of this corn planted. I'm just not sure that's a big enough number either, but we don't know that. That really depends on what the weather does the next couple months here. I think that the real question is, are we trading? Are we going to end up with $1.4 billion or $1.5 billion like the government has now? Or are we trying to keep it above $1 billion, which is more in the camp I'm in, where I think we get back to the rationing of the demand and we need higher prices to ration demand?
Well, I follow social media, and I think the prevent acres you're talking about is way too high. I saw pictures of guys planting corn in standing water, wreckers and graders and bulldozers pulling tractors out. So I believe those boys went through it real fast and tried to get in the ground. Now the quality's the issue on that. So the prevent plant's a moving target. And like Bill, you addressed it very well. Well, it's going to take some time to figure that out, but it's going to end up in the harvested acres, and that takes takes a while. And the other thing too is some of these acres unplanted could have been bean acres, and there's still a little bit of time on that yet, but it's a serious issue. The bottom line is the crop's late, and we got to have some heat units to work with. And the publication I follow here, over 227 years of publication experience, says it's going to be a cool summer, so we're going to be struggling. But October is warm, so don't expect an early frost just yet.
We'll have to watch and see how the Farmer's Almanac turns out on that one. Otherwise, you can always tune in to Illinois Public Media and willag.org and listen to the meteorologist and see where they're headed as we make our way through the growing season. Let's get some ideas about what producers might consider at this point. I think they're probably at this point still frustrated that they weren't able to plant. However, they haven't really thought that much about what their marketing should look like under these conditions. What are your ideas and what are you telling the producers and clients that about this marketing situation? It's a very unique year.
Well, I think first off, most of them have marketed more than they wish they had. So we're sitting back a little bit and waiting to see what happens at least over the next week. And I say that over the next week as we watched agreeable weather here today and looking, and we're seeing a lot of rain over the weekend. We're seeing a lot of rain after Monday and Tuesday dry, and then Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, you know, where we could see anywhere from 1.5 to 6 inches of rain, depending on where you're at. And that can make a lot of difference on how we finish up this planting. I know that as I was talking to a lot of different farmers in different areas today, some were able to go, some had to wait and hope for tomorrow, but tomorrow might ever come if it keeps raining along the way. So I think that is going to be a great big deal to see whether we never thought, and I said, well, surely we can get the beans planted. And they said, don't call me Shirley, and I don't think we might if it rains like this. So I think that along the way, we're going to see where these beans get in the ground, number one. And number two, what sort of weather we have. Do we turn hot and dry down the road here? Remember, pollination is going to be 3 weeks late. A lot of things can happen. It's a real moving target. Technically, we've got some room for a rally. You know, we talked to the technical people today. We closed above the levels that said we broke out of the descending triangle here. And, you know, the highest for the lead month here on a close on Thursday, can that follow through into the weekend because of the weather, or will we see the weather change? It's all a moving target. But along the way, we're not selling any more grain right now. And if you've oversold or did what Kurt said about the possibility of maybe doubling up, buy some out-of-the-money calls. They're going to be expensive, but maybe in the long run, they're cheap.
Yeah, I would agree with that strategy. I think it's tough to make the sales at this point in time without having some kind of protection against them in the call option side. And like I say, short dated new crop, you know, there's all kinds of out of the money, different ways you can go. You can spend what you want to spend and protect the levels that you want to protect doing that. So that's, I think, the way to approach it. You know, how aggressive you get, I think you keep stuff in the future side of it, either through the HTAs or selling the futures, because I think the basis is still very much open. This spread narrowing in today tells me that that's the first sign, as Wayne had said earlier, that there's a real supply situation out here, because the classic example is that your basis narrows up, which we're seeing, especially in these areas with no crops planted, then the spreads tighten, futures go up to try to get the grain bought. That's the order it's supposed to work in, and I think that we will see some better opportunities from a futures price standpoint, but we can't ignore it. We need to also look probably out to the 2020 crop at some point and make sure that we don't ignore that.
And Bill suggested, and of course, the order in which this happens, and we have seen bases in Ohio really narrow up, even go to overs, 25 and 35 over, depending on whether they're close to an ethanol plant or not. What are your thoughts as it relates to the marketing then?
Well, very good points from Wayne and Bill both. We still like the KISS theory. You can come in and put a $4 price floor under, you clear out the March right now, then that leaves your upside open. You're not committed to bushels or, you know, price the grain elevator. If the basis keeps firming up, you can take advantage of that. So I think you got to find your risk tolerance, and you got to have staying power. We've seen a lot of people have a great idea but didn't stick with it or get spooked out. You got to stick with it and have some covered positions. The other thing about the options is great point, short dated up front and so forth. The volatility is juiced. And Ellen Dearden back at the March Beef House meeting said, get your options purchased then because volatility is going to pick up. And she was just dead on. So they're kind of pricey, kind of juicy. You kind of watch it. You can buy a call. And the market can go nowhere, and that option could drop 5 or 6 cents, just sucking the juice out of it. So you got to watch them real close and have a plan with that. But the other thing to do is you can sell an out-of-the-money call option to help pay for it. So there's several unique strategies here. You know, give Bill a call, give Wayne a call, give our office a call. You just got to find something that fits your risk tolerance and gives you some staying power.
Weekly crop progress reports will end up stop reporting at some point, fairly soon, I believe, the planted acreage or how far along we are in the crop progress. That'll just happen before actually before we maybe even get done, I would think. That's generally the way they work. On the bean side, we are still extraordinarily behind. Corn as well, but bean is way behind, and we're looking just at rainfall that's coming. How do you deal with that marketplace? Because we have such a large carryout at this point, and even if we take a big hit, we could have 500 or 600 million bushels left over next year.
Yeah, even go back to the harvested bean harvest activity. So they were 100% done. There's being cut all winter long in this spring. So yes, there's a fudge factor in there, but you're dead on. A lot of these guys have learned or saw research on early planted beans yield better. So even if they're putting in beans, the idea is that the yield just might not be there. And some of those beans might not get in also due to prevent plant in some areas. That's the balancing act. I have trouble with the bean market right now. I like buying some puts to have a florist because we got that huge inventory and you're dead on. You can lower acres, you can lower yield, and we'll still have a 400 or 500 million bushel carryout.
And as you mentioned, USDA in their July WASD may try to assess what this bean market looks like in yield, but they just said it was too early this time around.
Oh yeah, we've got a lot of market in front of us. We got a lot of the growing season in front of us yet. And the thing is, a lot of these analysts will plug in the good to excellent category to determine the yield. I think you need to look at the poor and very poor and what areas those are readings from.
Wayne, going to the east from Illinois, what does it look like for both corn and soybean planting?
Well, I think that central Indiana done a fairly good job of getting the crop in. I think as you go southeast and south and northeast in Indiana, they did not do a good job of getting it in because they didn't have the chance. It's not because they're bad farmers. It's because they had bad weather. And I think that's a real problem. And I talked to farmers in Ohio today, same problem, too much rain. You know, a dairy farmer trying to get corn in today, he still needs it for silage. He says, I can put it out late, I can still do that. But I think some of us in looking at the whole thing is, number one, we're planting shorter season hybrids. They generally don't yield the same bushels as the longer season hybrids. That's one of the things that's happening out here now. We're going to have some acres are out there. The corn that is planted, let's face it, didn't look too good. Driving around just in my county, I saw three fields I'd rate excellent, four fields I'd rate good, and the rest of them I'd rate poor to very poor, very short, the stands were not good, and the population probably wasn't there. So I think we're going to have some problems with that. As we were talking back and going into old crop stuff, basis levels, good time, move some. If you're scared about doing it, you know, buy a put underneath it. Just buy a put. Don't buy the call. Puts are cheaper, and you can protect the bottom side for pricing that.
I think a couple of things. One is, from a world standpoint, there's some stuff going on in South America and that I think the listeners need to be aware of. I mean, Brazil's got a big corn crop, second corn crop. Bases is weak. They're trying to export corn. We're about $20 to $21 a ton cheaper. I'm sorry, more expensive than the Brazilian corn is. So we're out of the market really from the export standpoint. But as they're trying to export all the corn out of the country, they're running about 6 million metric tons or so behind on the soybeans that they're exporting to China right now. There's going to come a point down the road where China's going to have a problem here and not be able to keep up with the. They pretty much use their reserves up trying to avoid buying beans from us last year. So one of the things that we can kind of see out there from our Asian contacts is that there may come a waiver or something. I don't really see that there's going to be a trade agreement with China. I think we're getting further apart on that. But they may still import some beans from us just because of the standpoint that they're going to need to once they get in that fall period, January, where they're not going to be able to get enough beans out of Brazil, I think. I don't think that's necessarily real bullish on beans. So I think the bean number, if you take 1.85 ratio, that's about as low as I think we can get on beans versus corn. That's kind of where your limits are as far as what soybeans can do to the top side, I think.
There was something on the newswire on Thursday morning that said that China was going to limit the amount of corn they sold out of their reserves to make to the Chinese people or the Chinese farmers or feed manufacturers or whatever. That tells us something. They are scared. They don't have. They don't want to let their reserves drop too low. So along with that, so does Brazil have enough corn for China, the rest of the world, and whatever? If we have a short crop, that's maybe where a little bit of business could come. We might not get to China. And if, just if, we get lucky, and Donald J. does want to make a deal, and he shows up like Monty Hall and says, let's make a deal, why, maybe, and just maybe, we can get some corn and beans sold into China and help our carryouts go down so we don't have our massive carryouts. Now, that's all the very, very best case scenario, along with a lot of things, but I'm a hopeful sort of guy.
So the one thing that we don't talk often about on the show, but makes a big difference all the time in the world market, is that wheat is the primary feed grain as opposed to corn. Wheat still needs to move across the planet, and it would be a blockade on price to the upside, relatively speaking, here in the United States for corn to move higher. What's the world situation for that crop?
Well, the world wheat situation still has a burdensome number worldwide, but it's starting to narrow up from the standpoint Australia's been in a drought for 2 years. Then there's concern about the European or the Russian weather situation there, so it can tighten somewhat. Moisture-wise here in the U.S., we'll continue to see how harvest activity starts up and takes place out west. You know, with the moisture we've had, ideas are that the wheat crop's in fairly decent condition. There could be some isolated disease issues or delayed harvest activity due to too wet weather. But the issue is corn is totally separate from the standpoint if we don't have a whole lot of poor quality wheat that goes into feed wheat, we'll continue to feed corn, but also too the ethanol and some of this export business we could pick up maybe on the side is still a supportive issue.
Let's wrap up.
Todd, I just want to say one thing on the wheat. The USDA did add more feed wheat on their report, but I think they were looking more in the hard wheat. I think something that may be different this year, we may see some actual soft wheat in the east getting fed because of the situation with the lack of acres planted.
Is it a basis play for farmers across much of the United States at this point? Is that where they need to be watching most closely?
I think so, Todd. I think that's going to be one of the things we want to watch. We can price there. Remember, like I say along the way, if you really want to hang on to things, buy a put. Don't price the the cash there. Calls are more expensive. You're paying up. It leaves you wide open that way. One of the things I did want to throw into the end was University of Illinois said the corn planting did not reach 50% until June 4th, and that's the slowest planting of corn going in the ground since before 1960.
That's one thing on basis too. You've picked up quite a bit from last fall to now. So commercial storage even had some good returns. On-farm storage is even better yet. However, though, don't solely watch the basis, because I've seen people watch the basis and lose 50 cents on the downside.
Let's get a final word from each of you. I think Bill Mayer will start with you.
Yeah, I think one of the things that we didn't talk about here that I wanted to bring up today is one of the keys to where we end up with this corn crop is in these areas where we did get timely planted, what they're looking at on their yields and that. And I really haven't found anybody that I spoke with that's looking at yields, the type of yields we had last year, even in the areas where they got stuff planted timely. So that's going to be a key. Nebraska, parts of Iowa where they got planted, southern Minnesota, keep an eye on where those conditions are.
Wayne Nelson?
I think it's going to be a tricky week. We're going to have to watch the weather closer than anything. If the weather stays wet, I think we continue to this rally here. If not, watch the consolidation and see whether we back up or not. But the weather is the important thing.
And Kurt Kimmel.
Yeah, volatility's on the rise. It's not really easy from here on out. I think you just got to have a plan and keep it simple and have some staying power.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can hear the whole of our program anytime you'd like on our website at WILLAG.org. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, including Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities, and Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.